you, sir, you recorded this morning and it's already up.
Yeah.
That is some badass shit.
And I had to edit it too.
Really?
Yeah, it was an edit memo.
Wow.
Like, Dan Kaplan came over and talked to us for like
you
five
did
minutes.
More before breakfast than I will probably do all day.
Yep.
So, welcome to wherever you are. I'm Ryan McNeil and I'm looking for my show notes.
They're on there somewhere.
There we go.
There you go.
You're listening to episode 74 of the MatineeCast. It's a movie loving podcast of my movie loving website, thematinee.ca, your home for cinematic passion and perspective. Today we're doing something a little bit different. We're kind of recording on the fly. This is going to be a little bit more casual than you're used to, mostly because plans changed, and I'm going to emulate your credo and try to work as quickly and whatnot as I can.
Fantastic.
So we'll see how this works out. We have two guests today. They are both repeat guests, repeat guests. Like, you guys are damn near staff, basically.
What's horrible about me is that I complain about not getting to come on the show enough.
Yes.
And I've been on the show a ridiculous amount relative to everyone else.
I had to write whole new questions for you. And you guys have actually been on so often that we're not even really doing questions this time. Yes, we are. The voice you have already heard is a voice familiar to anybody who listens to Memo or who goes to the substream.com, Row3, or Tedrick.com. It is Matthew Brown. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming by and actually, you know, showing up.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Can we tell that story?
No, okay. No, we'll leave that alone.
Of course
alone.
We will.
No, well, maybe. And there we go. The other voice who you just heard, again, familiar to listeners of this show, it is my darling wife, Lindsay Rigoni. How are you this morning, hon?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad. How is the weather at 4 in the morning?
Why? Because I was up till 4 in the morning.
Yes, you were.
I'm always up till 4 in the morning.
What were you doing up till 4? Tell the people.
I don't remember what I was
doing. You were baking.
Oh, I was baking cookies because somebody went to bed last night going, you know what, I haven't had any sugar cookies yet this year. Oh, it would be really great if I could have some sugar cookies.
I was just planting a seed. I wasn't saying, like, get in the kitchen now, bitch.
No, of course not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I planted the seed.
But it was
at
a challenge accepted. But I have not had time to ice them yet. They're undecorated sugar cookies. But this evening you will have sugar cookies.
Wonderful. But you know, next time. You don't need to stay up that late making them. I do thank you for that, though.
You're kind of intruding on this podcast. You're sort
yes,
of, you're
well,
sort of,
I am.
You're sort of not
I,
welcome
yeah,
here.
I was actually going to sacrifice my own show like I did with the Harry Potter show. The plan did not quite work out, but that is why two-thirds of that Avengers team is here.
Ooh, the Avengers team. I like it.
The Matinee Cast Avengers?
Yeah.
We like this? Okay.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sure y'all will show up. You can kick me off for something else in the future.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Well, we were supposed to have Sasha, and to reuse a joke that I used on someone else the other day on Twitter, she is now the Boromir to our fellowship, i.e. she's dead to us all.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, we still have two more Hobbit movies to make this
yeah,
work.
Yeah. So I might, who knows? We might.
So why weren't you going to come on? You're not enough into the franchise?
We were very enthusiastic, and I don't think he was as enthused.
Yeah, I do not care as much, which has not really changed, so that'll be interesting when we get into this.
That's
well,
good.
I think, too, he thought it was going to be much like us with Harry Potter, us just going on and on and on about how much we love it and this all the nerd stuff, and then he would have been like the...
I would have been the lone disappointment.
But
negative
I don't
Nancy.
Actually think that's what's going to happen today.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
If you want to learn more details about the guests and recording of episode 74, check out the Twitter series I call Mike and the Mechanics. You can find them if you look at my Twitter feed today being Monday, December 17th, or by searching #MATM74. On episode 74, we will be discussing The Hobbit and Unexpected Journey. We'll turn the record over and play the other side, and we're going to do a whole different question of Know Your Enemy right now. So, given that you have forced me to create a whole new round of questions, I was not writing a fourth round yet.
No.
And you had...
I was impressed I got a third round.
Yeah, it wasn't easy.
I haven't done the third round yet, but when you first gave them to me, I was like, those are too hard. I'm not coming up with the answers to those.
I decided to go with just one question, and I'm actually going to get in on the fun. I don't normally get to do this. It is... We are just over a week away from Christmas, and people have different choices. I wanted to know, what is your Christmas movie? Are you big into the whole Christmas thing? I know, like, look around you. Yeah. You know how much Lindsay's like into Christmas.
Your advent calendar is fantastic. I admire the fact that you actually have full-size nutcrackers, because we had one when I was a kid, and I'm not convinced we still have one.
Those are actually not full-size. They're midget nutcrackers,
but they're not the little tiny ones, right?
No. I like those because they looked like they were just short dudes.
Yeah. So the answer is, I'm an atheist, and yet I'm ridiculously into Christmas for totally non-religious reasons.
Which I think is totally cool.
Don't consider... To me, Christmas is... I mean, I'm technically Catholic, but not really. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's a holiday like Thanksgiving. I'm very into it, but I've never once considered it a religious holiday. I've never...
Yeah. And I think the end of the year, particularly because it gets dark and gloomy and whatnot, I just feel like... cat's talking now. The cat it preempted my point, but I feel like the end of the year requires everyone to sort of just have a moment of being like, yeah, things are good. We like each other.
Getting together.
Yeah, let's celebrate the year that we had. And I don't like New Year's, so I guess I move all that on to Christmas and say that's when to celebrate.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, so then the question is, and I guess we'll start with you, what is your Christmas movie?
Well, my answer, I am realizing just now, doesn't actually connect to what I just said. My Christmas movie is Batman Returns.
Okay.
Yeah. It is set at Christmas, and I think it's Tim Burton's best film. I know I'm alone in that. But I find it's just such a beguiling portrait of three incredibly lost and lonely people, which Tim Burton's great at, but I think that's his height, that I think it speaks to a very specific idea of the dark side of Christmas, if you will. The last scene of the movie where, on Christmas morning, Bruce Wayne is just touring around in the pre-dawn dark looking for Selina Kyle, it really gets me emotionally worked up. Like, it's very sad and beautiful that...
That's being pulled down on my list. I'm going to have to watch that.
I was going to say, I can't remember. First of all, I can't remember the last time I sat down and watched it end to end, for starters. And it's certainly not one that I pull at Christmas time. I think I've pulled it a few times when a Batman film is coming out, when I do the inevitable run up that we all do. But it's never occurred to me as a Christmas
film. Never thought to watch it at Christmas.
Which is crazy because Christmas is all over that movie.
Yep.
Now tell me something, because I know you would have seen it when it came out in a theater. Did it kind of throw you a little bit that was a summertime movie set at Christmas?
I actually think it contributed to some of the weaker performance. I mean, the film didn't do badly, but it didn't do as good as the first. I think if they'd released it in December, it would have made a freaking fortune more than it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's because of the tone, and it is dark and sad and strange. I think it would have played in the winter a lot better than it played in June.
I'm like that with... I'm like that with Die Hard,
right?
Which is one of my Christmas movies, but it was a summertime film.
Yeah,
you know, and I was like, why didn't we release this in December?
I was lucky; I saw Die Hard for the first time at Christmas, so it totally got cemented for me as a Christmas film as well.
Well, you've given me something to watch this week, so thank you for that.
There you go.
I know you had a hard time narrowing this down, not to mention the fact that I sprung the question on you.
Yeah, just like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah,
I have so many Christmas traditions that I don't know that I could narrow it. I can't go through a Christmas season without watching Home Alone, or National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, or at this point, Elf. Like, I know it's more recent, but that's usually one of the first ones that I watch. But let's say
that's almost 10 years old now.
Is it? Oh my god,
2003.
Oh my god.
But I'm the same way. Like, I have my tradition stuff, and then there's my favorite Christmas movie, which is Return. So,
but I guess I would probably say it's probably National Lampoon's when I'm by myself. I will just grab it. Oh my god. Sorry, we're not hurting this cat. That's what she sounds like when she's playing. But our family tradition in my house is we'll get together and watch Home Alone. I'll probably do it sometime this week.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you and I over the years have gone back and forth on Home Alone because I believe, and I could... This could be hearsay. I believe this is a bad movie.
No, my.
No.
Why are we married?
Absolutely not.
It's
funny,
a bad movie.
And I grew up with it, so I get the appeal.
But it's not a bad movie.
I would bet you good money that if you pulled a random person off the street who had never seen it and said, "Watch this, it's awesome."
Have you ever seen that Seinfeld episode?
George
has never seen Home Alone.
Yeah, and he watches both of them in a day.
He rents Home Alone, and he for some reason has this cassette, and he's like, "Oh, I've never seen it." And they kind of leave him alone in the apartment. He's like, "Yeah, I'm going to watch Home Alone." They come in 2 hours later, and he's sitting on the couch weeping at the end of Home Alone, and he's like, "The old man."
Well, exactly. Yeah. If you can't get through that movie without shedding a tear on the old man scene when he's like looking at his granddaughter singing in the choir, it's like, come on, that is Christmas.
Okay,
as good as any kind of classic Jimmy Stewart stuff.
Yeah. No,
and
that's great.
The spider on the face scream is, like, one of the funniest moments, like, ever.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I
think there's somewhere on YouTube where there's, like, someone's looped the spider in the face scream just over and over again. And you can just watch it endlessly. It's amazing.
It is.
I don't know. I feel maybe I've just outgrown it. Or it's if somebody out there has never seen Home Alone, watch it and, you know, kind of put it to
My sister has custom Wet Bandits art. made for her.
Yes.
Like, a friend of ours, for her birthday last year, her, like, a painting of, instead of two swords crossing, it's two...
wrenches?
Wrenches, or whatever. Yeah, and it says, like...
Or crowbars?
Two crowbars, and it says crowbars up.
Nice.
Like, it's great.
Jeez, nice.
A friend had that custom made for her.
Well, mine is one that we watched the other night, and it's kind of a strange choice for me. Mine is Love Actually.
It's not that strange.
Okay. Partially because Christmas is all over that movie, mm-hmm. and different facets of Christmas. Like, you've got a marriage, you have a relationship that's just starting, you've got, you know, all sorts of little, like, flaring up romances. You do have some friends.
And as much as Keira Knightley is always hot, sorry, Lindsay, the thing where he goes to her door and holds up the signs, I mean, I think my heart grew seven sizes that day. Like, honestly, I was just like, oh my God!
I mean, it's really sweet on his end, but she, there's nothing, because I don't like her as an actress.
Hey, she's married to Chiwetel Ejiofor. She's doing fine.
In the movie.
Oh, in the movie. In the movie. I thought you were saying, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh my God,
I understand her choices, is what I'm saying.
I don't really like her as an actress, and her worst acting is when she's not talking, because she does a lot of stuff with her face. So to me, there's no worse thing you can do than create a scene where she's not allowed to say anything and mm-hmm. just has to react to stuff, and she does all that stuff with her mouth. No. She mouth acts. So.
She mouth, well, dangerous method.
The other thing I like about it a lot, I kind of had this conversation when we were talking about Silver Linings Playbook, mm-hmm. is I think it's an example of a romantic comedy done right. Mm-hmm. I think that romantic comedies get unfairly slammed because we equate them with, you know, Katherine Heigl, Gerard Butler starring crap.
Well, the thing is, romantic comedies were always really good, cute movies. It's not until recently that I think they've gotten a bad name because...
No, I think that's always been there. I just think the bad ones fade and we remember the great ones as time passes. But I think of
The Apartment or...
Oh, I know.
I mean, romantic comedies were
good
movies.
Annie Hall is great.
Yeah, I just think it's a genre in its autumn now. Like, I think the 90s saw so many and so many versions of what you could do with it that, you know, when one comes along, it's good. It's like, you got to look at it and... I look at Silver Linings, I'm like, that's really good, and it's got to be one of the last romantic comedies I will really love in my lifetime. Like,
maybe, and that's one of the things I think about. You know, I think I see maybe one a year that I think I will watch that again.
Yeah,
you know, and for me, it's not only is as it much, not only is that it for Love Actually, but it's the Christmas movie as well.
Yeah,
as much as I love romantic comedies, there's so many now that I used to just see them because I'm like, oh, romantic comedy, it looks crappy, I'll see it. They're at a point now where I see 5% of them because they look so bad most of the time.
Yeah.
So I'll admit that the genre's kind of gone to hell, but there's still really good ones out there, and Love Actually is one of them.
Yeah. Well, there we go. The short version of Know Your Enemy this time, and I got to get in on the fun. That is kind of cool, actually. I might do that more often.
Yeah, no, it's good.
But
we don't know you, and you are our greatest enemy.
I'm the enemy of all, really.
Yep.
I'd love to know other people's Christmas movies, so if you want to email me in or leave a comment, do so. We're going to skip feedback this week. I only got a very little bit of it. Your sister in arms, Matthew Price, I asked what franchise people would want to see more from. He mentioned Back to the Future.
Mm-hmm.
And he specifically mentioned revisiting 2015. Somebody else mentioned going and seeing more films from the universe of Speed Racer.
Oh, I'd happily see more Speed Racer. I couldn't handle a trip back to the Back to the Future universe.
No?
No.
Oh, I
hold it all too sacrosanct. It would really disturb me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, but not even like Leave Marty Alone, not even like a whole other one.
I try not to apply hard and fast rules and stuff like this because if someone who's really smart did a story that was really good and the movie was good, obviously I wouldn't complain.
Mm-hmm.
But if they just remake Back to the Future and send some kid back to 1985, I'd be like, come on, you know, like it's just leave it alone. It's perfect.
Fair enough.
But I mean, when Christopher Nolan first started doing Batman, I was like, really? Really, we need to revisit Batman.
Yeah.
So so you're right. Being hard and fast about this kind of thing is maybe a little iffy.
Yeah.
So sorry about that. We are going to skip feedback actually for a few episodes because we've got some other things coming up. But any comments about the site, please leave it. We are going to skip straight to the new slang. The new slang this week is The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, is directed by Peter Jackson. It was written by Jackson, Fran Walsh, Zane Wiener, and Guillermo del Toro. It's based, of course, on the J.R.R. Tolkien book. It stars Martin Freeman, Ian McKellen, Richard Armitage, Cate Blanchett, Hugo Weaving, Andy Serkis, and a partridge in a pear tree.
On the writing staff, I believe you left out my hero Philippa Poyens, who joined, I believe, when they were writing Lord of the Rings.
Oh, my apologies. Yeah. Wikipedia can suck it then.
Yeah.
So, The Hobbit, of course, takes place before the Lord of the Rings trilogy. We rejoin Bilbo Baggins when he is much younger. What, about 40 years earlier?
I think it's 60.
60?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. 60 years earlier. And he set out onto a little quest with some dwarves, basically to reclaim their home at the behest of Gandalf the Grey. What did we think of this movie, guys?
Who wants to start?
You go.
Yeah, you're warmed up. This is twice over today for you.
So. Yeah, well, true. So I need to preface it just by saying that the stakes on this for me are a lot smaller because I prefer the Lord of the Rings book to the Hobbit book, which is not true for everybody. I obviously love the Lord of the Rings trilogy, but at no time did I think that by making this project they were going to come close, nor should they come close to the Lord of the Rings because it is smaller in scale. Yeah. And I thought, you know, it should be smaller and it should be kind of more of a tangent, which is kind of how it's presented, right? It starts with this framing sequence, which I don't actually like the scene with Frodo at the beginning, but I appreciate what it's trying to do, which is it's like, it's not, you don't have to watch this before Lord of the Rings. You could watch it after, and it's like a riff on some of the things that you saw. So with all that said, I did really like the movie. I had a good time. It's not as good as Lord of the Rings. And there are various things about it that I kind of question. But yeah, I liked it. But I think the question we have to ask right off the top is like, what version of the movie are we reviewing?
We'll get there because you guys saw something that I did not see.
Right.
I actually think we need to address it right off the bat.
Well, no.
It does make a difference.
We'll get there because I think I want to focus on the actual what's happening on the screen, the story, and how it's presented.
Sure.
We'll get to the actual technology in a bit because that's kind of a very important conversation, but it's
sure. I'm only trying to raise the point that Jackson, the version that Jackson would say is the real version, is probably the 48 version.
I saw that first.
Yeah.
And I had no opinion of the film. I actually felt like I hadn't seen the film
when
I left it, so I was like, now I got to go see it in 24. So,
and I agree with Ryan that that's kind of a separate point. My point is just that this is a weird release.
Yeah.
Where a lot of critics wrote reviews based on a version of the movie that was presented in a technology that they had serious problems with, and they weren't able to extract the two from one another. So I'm happy to review the film as a film because I've seen it in both versions.
Yeah. So, I've seen both versions as well. And so, I couldn't... If you had asked me a week ago and I had only seen the first screening, people were like, well, what did you think of the movie? I had zero opinion. I was like, I don't know if I liked it. I don't know if I hated it. I actually have no idea because I don't feel like I've seen a film yet.
Now that you saw it again.
I saw a visual experiment.
Yeah. Now that you saw it again, because you saw it with me.
I'm still...
Inglourious 2D, 24 frames per second.
Beautiful. 24 frames per second.
What did you think of that?
I liked it. And I liked it a lot because it's still Lord of the Rings and I loved Martin Freeman as the Hobbit. And I'm just saying the Hobbit, but as Bilbo.
That's how
he is the only one.
He's the Hobbit.
That's how the dwarves refer to him.
And I love, And I loved all the elements of it. I didn't like it as much as Lord of the Rings. And I did think, unlike you, my expectations were that I was going to love it more than Lord of the Rings. Because when I saw the Lord of the Rings films, I actually hadn't read any of the books.
Oh.
And after those, I had read The Hobbit. So this is the first time I had some kind of expectations. And I really like it. I like it more thinking back on it. Because when I think back, because some stuff I don't think I love, but when I think about it, I'm like, what didn't I like about it? And I'm having trouble coming up with the stuff that I didn't like. There's one character probably that I didn't like.
The
Goblin King character.
Oh, really?
That was a little too cartoony for me.
Okay.
Just a little too, and I thought
it's a tonally weird one given the context of the other movies.
Yeah, and I think...
He speaks in a very specific British accent.
Yeah, and I think... Yeah.
Well,
maybe if I... The first time I saw it, I really wasn't expecting that. So I was like, what is happening?
Mm-hmm.
The second time I was anticipating it, so it didn't bother me as much. And I think I just need to get over the Lord of the Rings expectations where it's a little more serious and the bad guys are really menacing and frightening to have a more comical sounding bad guy. It's probably not a problem. Probably on my third or fourth watch, which there will be, will not have a problem with it.
I was okay with it. I was only okay with it. It's of the four Middle Earth films. It is by and large my least favorite. I was actually struggling with the first hour, which was very strange for
me.
How
did you feel when the dwarf sang? I actually was wondering what you were thinking. Like, when they were doing the dishes and they were singing.
I was okay, like, because that's what dwarves do. Okay, and the second song actually reminded me of the tune
that...
The
second song's great.
Yeah, it reminded me of the tune that Mary sings in Return of the King, mm-hmm. which I've always loved. I've always loved that little moment. And
I believe you mean Pippin.
This is correct.
You do mean Pippin.
Yes, I do mean
Even
Pippin.
Even when you said Mary, I was picturing Pippin in my head, so
yeah,
I didn't catch that. But.
Yeah.
When we saw the film The Time Play Game before, it actually had that wrong in the game.
Wow.
They had a picture of Mary captioned Pippin, and I yell out, "That's the wrong Hobbit!"
Oh, man. Sorry. So that reminded me of Pippin's moment in Return of the King, which I have always adored. It seemed to really take its time getting... going, and not to mention that we're introduced to just so many characters all at once. It's like, here you go, sort them all out.
I was really comfortable with how they introduced the characters, because I really did feel quickly that each of the dwarves had their personality.
Well,
and like I can't associate with them with their names.
Yeah.
But with their faces and personality, when that one guy is like, "What can I do with my plate?" I was already like, "Oh,
yeah.
You are adorable."
Well,
like,
that was
okay.
One of the things I thought was interesting was that they definitely gave moments to, I'd say, about half the dwarves.
Half the dwarves are still kind of the other.
And the other ones are just
I was going to say, I will
yeah.
vacuum
yeah.
this apartment for a month straight if you can name me 6 of the 13 dwarves.
I don't know their names. There's Gloin and...
There's
a dreamy dwarf. Who's the dreamy dwarf that looks like
it's what's
his face?
It's not Snow White. They don't go. It's that dreamy, grumpy, hungry.
Either Philly or Killy. I don't know which one.
It's one of the
See
two.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is the problem.
And since their names don't matter.
No, but they do, because I can think back on the Fellowship of Nine, and along with the fact that they are different species, for lack of a better term, I could name them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I, because I'm not having read Lord of the Rings, when I first saw it, I didn't know Boromir's name until my third viewing. Saron and Saruman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh my god, even in the books, I had no idea who was referring to what. So I'm not worried about their names. So there's the dreamy one, there's the main guy, there's the young one who's really sweet, there's the old guy who used to be in battle, there's the guy who's friends with the dreamy one, yeah.
I'm not vacuuming
there's
for that.
There's the chubby guy who likes food a lot.
Yes, yes.
Think what is happening right now is fantastic.
I'm sure you do. So I was, now around the 1 hour mark or so, basically when they get done with the, basically when they get to Rivendell,
yeah.
That was when it caught on for me. And after that, I saw somebody actually this morning really not liking it, but I liked the mountain fight.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
that's
really
visually
cool.
Really cool.
At that point, that was when things kind of caught on for me. But that first hour was a fight. If it was something I was watching on DVD or TV, I might have tuned out.
Right. I was very curious to see how Jackson was going to address the more whimsical elements of the source novel, because there's stuff that happens in The Hobbit which doesn't seem to fit in the world he established in Lord of the Rings, and the
mm-hmm.
rock battle is a great example. I'd argue so are the trolls, right? Like, trolls, for the most part, in the Lord of the Rings are presented as these, like, voiceless apes. And then here's these three having a conversation about fine cooking, you know?
Yeah.
And it's quite a long one. And that's the way it is in the books. That's the way you should do it. But I thought he actually managed the tone of stuff like that really well.
Yeah.
Like, it fits, it seems to fit in the world he created
mm-hmm.
the first time around. Which I did not think was going to be the case when you have a troll whose name is actually Bert. Like, that surprised me.
Yes,
you know?
A little bit.
Yeah.
The other thing that I noticed for this movie, I don't know if you guys noticed this or not, is it felt like compared to, and I have to compare it to the earlier trilogy just because they go hand in hand. I don't like doing that very often, but I can't avoid it in this one. Mm-hmm. I really felt like this movie had a complete lack of stakes. Whereas in the other film, almost right off the draw,
mm-hmm.
with the Ringwraith, even just chasing down the four hobbits, that was there from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
There was seldom a situation that the dwarves and Bilbo got themselves into that I did not think that they were going to get out of very easily.
Right.
And I mean, you do have, I mean, the first Lord of the Rings, you do lose Boromir. So it's, you have a sense of loss.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
And you supposedly lose Gandalf at the beginning, too.
Right. And I know that some of the dwarves don't make it
mm-hmm.
From the book. I can't remember which ones, and I've kind of avoided going back and checking.
I can't remember
rather,
which ones, because there was that moment when they're hanging from the tree, because I kept thinking, oh no, is the young one going to go?
But I kind
really...
of feel like the Boromir moment is something this movie actually needed. I'm like,
yes.
If you've got 13 dwarves and you're not
there's
bothering
a lot of dwarves.
Establish several of them, he should have considered killing one of them at the end of this movie, because it would have established this quest has real stakes.
I don't know if it's, this is the weirdest critique I've ever given. I don't know if it's a problem of too many orcs or something, but just every time they were overwhelmed with a creature, be it orcs or goblins, something in the staging of it, just, I did not get that sense of danger of, oh crap, they're not going to get out of this. There's just too many. It was like, they'll fight their way out. There's no problem.
It's weird.
I don't know why.
There's the flashback to this big battle outside the Mines of Moria, and arguably it's a much bigger technical accomplishment than the massive battles of Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. But I feel the same way. It felt like it was so detailed and so perfect that it didn't really engage with me as sort of like, oh, someone could get hurt. And I don't understand.
I felt like everybody, you could just like slash through people a little too easily. Like,
exactly.
Kind of,
yeah, and I don't understand the addition of the white orc. I really don't. Like, I
know. Oh, is that? I actually, because it's been so long since I read the book, I didn't remember, and I didn't like that character.
He's mentioned in the book, but he's killed before the book starts.
Okay.
Like, basically, he gets killed in the battle and actually stays dead.
Yeah.
I initially thought it was they were adding this character like they added the big Uruk-hai in Fellowship of the Ring, so that the hero would have someone to kill at the end.
That guy.
But then they don't kill him. No. And I'm like, well, this saga does not need more villains. You've already got the Necromancer, you've got Saruman, you've got the dragon that you've got to go and kill. What we need an orc who's got no hand to add to that? Like,
and he's got a stick. Yeah. I did love the stick for the arm.
Yeah, no, it's great. Like, it's sticking out his elbow. I thought it was a great visual.
Did you ever see Where the Wild Things Are?
Yeah.
It was a lot like, remember where they stick? Yeah.
Absolutely.
I actually did have a problem with the design. The fact that he was 100% CG, I felt, took away from it, because when you had the main Uruk-hai in Lord of the Rings, I mean, he was menacing. Like, I really felt, like, he was really frightening.
Yeah.
And there was a big sense of danger to me when they were fighting. But because it's not ever a guy, it's always CG, it doesn't have the right feeling. I do feel like that the design of that, I like the look of them and everything's fine, but I do think it should have been done in a way that could have been a person.
Mm-hmm. And that's strange in itself, because the one thing I noticed this movie is Gollum looks better, for lack of a better term. He's there, you know, we're 10 years later, so the technology is that much better and it's easier to do more. And he's got more detail. He looks a little bit more true. So it's strange that they could take one character. Maybe it was a character that, you know, because they had such established visual on him already, that to tweak him was easy, and to counter that with a main heavy that does not look right.
Well, I did feel with this, you could tell, because it was so much CG, I do feel like it had a little more than Lord of the Rings.
This was the first time where I was like, it looked more like the Lovely Bones than the Lord of the Rings. Like, every sky was perfect. Even the ones they shot on location, they were tweaked in a little way, so they were perfect.
Yeah, and I felt like you could see, like, the tears of the work. So Gollum would have had the most man hours. He looked fantastic.
Yeah.
Then you had stuff like the white goblin who had a little, you know, a lot of people worked on them. And then you could see, like, the third tier stuff where, you know, like the morgues kind of running through. And
the stuff that the interns at Weta worked on?
Yeah, I just felt like there was moments where you could see, like, they didn't get the man hours to get these scenes, and it felt a little cartoony.
Well, the scene with Radagast, and Radagast is far and away my favorite part of this movie, but the scene with Radagast leading the orcs away.
What's Radagast?
Radagast is the brown one.
Oh, that's okay. Sylvester McCoy. I thought that was, like, I was watching an animated sequence.
But yes, the scene where he's leading the orcs away looks terrible.
Looks terrible, and I mean, I know we're not getting into the frame rate thing.
We'll get there soon.
It looked a little better in 24, but in 48, I just felt like I was watching cartoon characters running through the screen, because when it's, like, you need some kind of grain or something to cover up the fact that someone's just animated something.
But in a way, that almost charmed me. And I know this sounds silly, because it's like, the effects in Lord of the Rings were almost always great, but once in a while they fell down. And I'm like, there's something charming about the fact that even now with all of these resources, we're still not quite there.
Yeah.
Like, the Goblin King looked like a real thing photographed in a real environment. I was like, that's amazing. Same with Gollum. The whole Gollum scene is fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it was nice that once in a while, even in spite of his hundreds of millions of dollars, he couldn't quite get there.
Yeah. So before we get there, because we've kind of been, you know,
all
picking
over the place.
Like, I want to ask you guys, what is something, as deeper fans of this property than I am, because I think I've come to the conclusion that this is just not my franchise.
Sure.
I watch it and I enjoy it, but it is not the thing I reach for. I think it's twofold. It's one, the fact
don't
that,
say it's too long.
I don't agree with that. One, I was actually like a month late to Fellowship of the Ring. Like, everybody in the world had seen it, including my parents.
No, I was a year late. I didn't see it.
Okay,
the year
so
it
then I can't. So then
a
I can't
later.
Do that. And then, but my other disenchantment is that is the 16 endings to Return of the King, which just left me with a bad taste that I never really came back.
But, and when it ended, I was like, why is it over already? Yeah. Can't there be more?
And I'm like, just finish.
I still miss the Scouring of the Shrine.
As fans of this franchise, what was something in this movie that you really liked above all?
In this one?
In this film, yes.
My favorite thing is Radagast the Brown. Like, I thought that in all of his scenes, like, the way they worked in the discovery of the menace at Dol Guldur, I thought was really good, and it justified the approach where they were adding stuff from the appendices into the existing structure of The Hobbit. I really dug it. I found those scenes had the most weight and stakes, and they were scary, and they were cool-looking, and Sylvester McCoy is darling. It's like, oh,
have I seen
still
him something else?
He was the seventh doctor. So it's like, oh, this is what happens to doctors after they change into new actors. They go to Middle Earth and go crazy.
This is officially the geekiest matinee cast we have ever done.
Well, I've only been into Doctor Who for about a year and a half, but I really like Sylvester McCoy. He's one of my favorite.
I haven't seen any of anything pre-Ninth Doctor.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've never seen any of the older ones.
Well, I mean, Tom Baker was on the air when I grew up, so I think he's kind of my default.
It scared
favorite.
Me too much when, I was younger. I had to change the channel if it came on.
What was something, like, as a fan of Middle Earth, what was something that you really liked about this
movie? I have to say, I can't imagine this film being made without Martin Freeman.
He's amazing.
I think he is. Every time now we are watching Love Actually, and he does that. There's that little moment when he kisses a girl and he jumps off the thing and he goes like, woohoo! And he puts his arms up. I was like, that was Bilbo. And now when I see him, there is no other actor on this planet that I would have accepted as Bilbo. It is Martin Freeman was so good in this. And I just feel like he's got the Hobbit charm, but at the same time, kind of the, I don't know what the right word is, the grumpiness, like the grumpy old man thing with kind of the childlike charm of a hobbit at the same time. And I think he's just perfect.
And what I responded to is he's not like any of the other four.
No, he's not.
It would have been so easy for him to be kind of more like Mary or more like Pippin or whatever. And it's like, no, he actually
is
his own character.
He's just
his own character. He's got a little Ian Holm in there, but not so much that it's distracting.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful performance.
For me, the one thing, even like as a non-devotee of the property, the one thing I actually really liked about it was Richard Armitage as Thorin. He's
got a little too handsome for a dwarf for me.
Hey, listen. Compared to handsome McDwarfington,
he's not even when I say the dreamy hobbit.
He's not even that one.
But he's still a little too dreamy for me to buy as a hobbit. He just looked like a little man.
I don't like the two. I guess it's maybe three dwarves who don't have prosthetics.
The third one you think the guy with the hat that goes sideways, that friendly one that was kind of nice, kind of became friends with both. There was three of them that didn't look.
I like him as a character, but as a look,
I
prefer the traditional Gimli look. I think they need to look.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, and basically, with Richard Armitage, every time the action kind of cut away from him, I wanted it to go back. Like he was for me what Viggo Mortensen was in that first film. It's like he's the guy who I really want to watch more of, and I think this is probably going to be a star-making turn for
him. Armitage is a terrific actor, and I'm really glad he's finally
getting
a big project.
I've never seen him in anything, I don't
believe. Yeah, he's done a bunch of British television.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get another beer. You guys argue about what is and is not wrong with 48 frames per second.
Sure.
Oh, because Ryan,
I haven't
seen it.
Well, here's the thing, and I said this on my other podcast, but I'll repeat it. I feel like there's no perfect way to see this movie. Because
there's problems in 24 that if it had been shot in 24, I don't think we would have had
problems. Right. Yes. So because it's been down converted, there were sequences in 24 where, as I was watching it, I hadn't seen the 48 version yet. But
for example, the scene you were talking about when he's what's his face, Radagaskar? No,
Radagast. Yeah,
Radagast. When he's being chased, looked a little weird in 24.
And the beginning looked weird, and the goblin town scenes looked weird, and I think down converting from 48 just created a motion blur that doesn't look right.
It looks a little weird. Yeah.
Detail. So when I was watching it, and I watched it in 24 first, I was very aware that those scenes were designed by Jackson to be seen in 48. That's how he conceived them, and that's why they looked like that. And true enough, when I saw it in 48, they looked way better. I really liked them. The rest of the movie weirded me out. Like, it's not...
I've never hated anything more than the visual experience I had for 2.5 hours.
Really?
People kept telling me beforehand, people who'd seen it, because I saw an early screening, so it was before it was in theaters. People had still seen it before, and they said, it's going to take an hour to get used to it, which, first of all, I think an hour is way too long to have to get used to something.
I agree.
And I did get used to it, but I thought it never got to the point where I'm used to it and it looks good now. It is ugly. First of all, it's too clear that I was very aware. Like, I never saw, as good as Martin Freeman is, I never saw Bilbo Baggins that first time. I saw Martin Freeman in a Hobbit costume. Mm-hmm. I saw Ian McKellen pretending to be Gandalf, because if they're too close, they look like real people. And there's sadly no such thing as a hobbit. So seeing a real hobbit in front of you, it's like, oh, it's a guy in a hobbit costume.
Yeah.
I could see the glue holding on the dwarf beards. Like, I could see, like, The Shining. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love that you prefaced that with sadly.
I'm very sad. There's no such thing as Hobbits. That breaks my heart a little bit.
Yeah.
Please continue.
I mean, I will mention that on our latest episode of Mammo, which went up today, Matthew Price has a completely different theory on HFR, which is that he actually ended up seeing it twice in the format, sort of by accident. But he argued that whatever you're supposed to gain from it, his brain burned the necessary pathways between the first and second screening. My first screening, I was very glad that I didn't see it first in 48.
I wish I could flip my screen.
So the pressure was off, and I could just sit back and say, well, this is weird. Let's watch this shit. You know, like,
yeah.
I could feel the people around me kind of freaking out, and I was freaking out, but at least I knew where everything was going, and I could sort of just distance myself from it. If I'd seen it that way the first time, I really would have been heartbroken.
I was heartbroken when I saw it, because I remember leaving not having liked the movie, and I thought there's no way I couldn't have liked that movie, because it's The Hobbit, and all the elements in it were glorious, and I didn't like the look of it. I didn't like the way the sunlight hit people, like it bounced off people, because it looked more like real life, and I don't want to see real life when I go to the movies. Real life is ugly.
Well,
I want a glorious art-directed scene in front of me that someone put thought into, and I don't want to see sunlight hit someone the way it would if you were really standing in front of me.
Film, and by film I mean filmmaking, is alchemy. It's magic, right? Like, we're slipping into a dream.
There was no magic in it.
And there's no magic.
No
in this
magic.
Format.
Well, that was actually going to be my next question. Is it not so much that 48 frames per second is a tool that we're not, you know, that we're not crazy about, so much as it is on this particular film, it doesn't fit.
No, I never want to see it again. I never want to see it again.
You wouldn't want to see it on, like, a reality-based drama.
Absolutely not. I thought there was no magic in it. The actor's performances, like, because everything is so clear, first of all, I don't think anything with CG involved in any way should be that clear.
Okay.
Because anytime there was a CG anything on the screen, it was like, here's a human being in a costume, and next to him is a cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
And then something else, you'd be like, oh, that background's not real. Oh, that, everything was so, and there was nothing magical about it.
See,
it just felt like it sucked the light, it sucked the magic out of the movie.
I'm not quite as harsh on it as you are. Like, A, I will happily see this film in it again, just because I find it so fascinating to look at. But B, I'm like, if Herzog had done Cave of Forgotten Dreams in this format,
that's the one exception I did think,
And I'm definitely up to see Avatar 2 in this format, because I think a completely CGI or mostly CGI movie might work better, because you have more control of stuff like the contrast and the
lighting. I also thought it was just ugly. Like, I thought it looked cheap and low budget.
It did.
It looked like, sometimes it looked like a BBC series. BBC series have a slightly different look than American series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just a different look to it. Like, you know that show Merlin?
Yeah.
Which I've never watched, but I've seen bits of.
Yeah.
It looked like I was looking at an episode of Merlin that sometimes slipped into a video game.
Yeah, Price actually had the best analogy. I didn't even think of this. Did you ever see Jim Henson's The Storyteller?
No.
He did a series back in, like, 87, which was live-action recreations of various kind of old ghost stories and legends and stuff like that. Looked exactly like that, because he shot that on what was then high-definition video, which
That's the strange thing for me, is that the push in technology in terms of movies has always been to get clearer and get clearer. You know, we're into digital film
now.
We're
at
4K.
Step back.
So, like, is that the thing? Like, we've reached the threshold of what we need to see? Because that seems to run completely counter to what we're told that we need to pay for and buy. Like,
it could be counter, right? Those are completely separate considerations, and any filmmaker who says they're not is probably just lying to try to make money.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that about Cameron and Jackson, because I actually think Cameron and Jackson are in earnest about a kind of technological geekiness that the majority of the people who go to see movies simply don't understand or care about.
Yeah.
Right? But when studios do something like this, they're not trying to give us a better experience.
No.
They're just trying to get money.
Yeah. Go figure.
Well, even how the way they held back tickets for the 2D version of The Hobbit until
the
last second.
That was truly irresponsible, because all that's going to do is create a negative relationship with your audience.
Yeah, when I tried to buy tickets online to the 2D version, it still kept coming up as a 3D price. So we had to physically go to the theater to buy our tickets to see it in 2D.
Yeah, I must admit, like, you guys and everybody who's talked about it, leave me wildly curious to watch 10 minutes of it at least. And see what it is. You know, I'd love to do it legally, but I might just theater jump into it and see what I'm in for.
Well, you need the glasses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
No, I would argue that people who are interested in film there is a strong argument for going to see that format.
Right.
Because it is interesting. I would not go to see it to see The Hobbit. I just couldn't see the format.
That's why when people said to me after I'd first seen it, what did you think of The Hobbit? I'm like, I have no opinion idea. Because I didn't see The Hobbit. It was an experiment, a visual experiment where I watched. So it was like someone trying, I've got this new technology I want you to see. So I didn't see a movie. Yeah. It was just, and it's hard to explain to for someone who hasn't seen it because it's not like normal 3D.
It might have been better. Different. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but it might have actually been better if he'd eased us into it. If it had been like a 10-minute sequence in the middle where somebody is retelling a story or some sort of sequence, you know, like don't drop us into the deep end.
Well, I'll use an analogy from my other podcast again, which is that when Lucas made The Phantom Menace, he shot the entire thing on film with the exception of two scenes that he shot on digital video cameras. They're just dropped into the middle. You probably don't notice them unless you're really paying attention. Then on episode two, he went all digital.
Yeah.
Right? That would have been the way to go with this. Right. Doing it on this project, which was already going to get so much scrutiny and so much shit just for being what it is, mistake.
Now, the only thing I think this fixes, because everyone knows, I hate 3D in general. I don't think anything should be in 3D. However, the one thing this fixed in 3D was the darkness wasn't a problem.
Yeah, okay.
Normally, 3D is too dark. So it does fix that. I think it creates a whole new world of problems. Well, but actually, the darker scenes look better than the
3D can't
scenes.
Win with you.
No, it's never going to win. I think 3D is stupid and insults my intelligence.
The contention that 48 was going to change, was going to fix the motion blur problem in 3D is also true.
Yeah.
Like, you do actually manage to keep hold of everything as it's moving around on the screen. I just argue that maybe the reward is not worth the expenditure.
No.
Right. So, before we leave The Hobbit, I usually ask people to kind of pick a souvenir from the movie, a performance, a line, a shot, something that if you could, you would keep in your pocket and take with you. What would be your one souvenir from
The Hobbit? Thing is Bilbo's speech, his Samwise Gamgee type speech at the end. You got to have that inspirational speech in every Lord of the Rings movie, and it's usually a Samwise thing. But when he does that thing, when he comes out at the end, he's like, I miss my home, and you guys lost your home. Oh, my heart just melts thinking of it. And his delivery of that speech, because he still maintains, like, he doesn't get overly emotional. He still kind of has his personality. Yeah. Oh, I just love that. I could just watch that speech over and over again.
Nice. Mr. Brown?
Well, I've already mentioned Radagast, so I will go to, at the very end of the Gollum sequence, there is a moment where they pull back to a full wide of Gollum alone in a corridor, realizing for the first time that he's actually lost the ring and what that means, and starting to cry. And that is the only moment in the entire film that carries the same kind of emotional weight as The Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay. I like that. For me, it is the character design of the Goblin King.
Oh, he's awesome.
Oh, I was like, oh, you are gross.
If he didn't talk the way he talked,
maybe.
I mean, just looking at it, and he was the one character I kept thinking, I feel like that's a Del Toro contribution.
Probably.
Because he was just so gross. Probably. I really felt like that's...
Yeah. Like, he looks like he'd be at home in a Hellboy movie easily.
Yeah.
But I still love that.
The, like pussy chin that he had.
I couldn't stop staring at the chin.
No.
I love that character design. Like, of the whole movie, that is definitely the thing I take away the most.
Because the problem I had with that character was definitely not the look of him. It was the
voice.
Performance. Yeah.
So we rate on a scale, and I know you don't usually rate, but we rate on a scale of 1 to 4 stars, including Habs. So guys, what do we give The Hobbit: An Unexpected Journey on a scale of 1 to 4?
I have to give it 2. In 48, I'm giving it half.
Wow.
In 2D, I'll give it a 4. No, wait, it's out of 4, not out of 5?
Yes.
I'll give it a
3?
Oh, crap, I don't know.
3 and a 1, and that equals out to a 2?
3.25.
Okay.
So because of Letterboxd, I've had to start doing star ratings, but those are out of 5. So I gave it a 4 out of 5, which is an 8 out of 10. So in 3,
that's what I want to say, 4 out of 5.
3.5.
Maybe 3.25 or something
that's
like that.
That's why I'm saying, because I would give it 4 out of 5, but out of 4... something 3.25.
I'm actually down around 2.5. I thought it was like just okay, and I could not leave the other three films out of my brain.
Right.
And I might change that going forward to see what else he does with this. I don't know that I agree with the idea to take a 200-page book and stretch it into three films. I want to be wrong. I always want to be wrong on that kind of thing, but I don't know that I necessarily...
You're never going to like it because he watched for the first time recently the extended Lord of the Rings. He had actually never seen it. So I was in the other room all excited because I had to work, but I was so excited thinking, oh my God, he's experiencing these new scenes for the first time. I'm so excited for him. And when he came out, we just went, it's too long. I've never wanted to slap somebody so bad.
It's more walking and more talking, and those are like my...
And well, I think that the... The theatrical versions are almost unwatchable because I don't think they make sense anymore.
That's just it. Yeah, I've completely converted over. I originally thought that theatrical Fellowship and Return of the King were my preference. I only like definitely like the extended towers more. Right. But Fellowship now has to be extended. I've just given up. I'm totally into the extended.
If I was to watch the theatrical and certain scenes weren't there, I'd be like, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
What's this butchery? Yeah. All right. Well, there we go. That's The Hobbit. Looks like I not unexpectedly liked it the least of the three. Mm-hmm.
But surprisingly, neither of us gave
it. Nobody loves it. I think that's the surprise.
That's the more shocking thing. I knew you weren't going to like it as much as we liked it.
Yeah, but I think that's the surprise, is that people aren't coming away from it knocked over the same way they were the other three.
I don't think there was ever any way they could be.
I thought there might be.
But at this point, I can't guarantee that a month from now, after I've watched it a few more times, that I would still give it 3.25. It could go up to 4.
We'll find out. Because
it does, like, thinking back on it, I'm like, oh, I did love this. Now that I'm used to the dreamy dwarf and it's not unexpected and I'm used to the way the Goblin King talks, I might get up there.
These weird scenarios come up in my movie going where it's like it's already part of the family, right? Like yeah. I know I've already bought this Blu-ray,
right?
You know, and like there are much worse examples. Like when Indy 4 came out, I hated that movie, but I was like, well, I got it. I can't not own this on Blu-ray because it's an Indiana Jones movie that stars Harrison Ford, so obviously I'm going to buy it. And it's the same thing. Much obviously, I like this way more. But it's like, it almost doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, I do feel like this with time, where it's going to make a little place in our heart, and then we won't want to change anything.
Yeah.
All right, well, we're going to come back right after this with The Other Side, so stick around. Okay, well, we've got, given that there's three of us today, we've got three other sides, which, of course, does not really work for a record analogy, but oh well.
Oh, that's a record analogy. I get it now.
Everything on the show is a record analogy.
I get it now.
Tell me you're surprised.
I'm not surprised, but, I mean, I've never actually
listened to my show, yes. There's that.
But
do you go through this?
Never?
No.
I'm not convinced Seraphine has ever listened to an episode. Man, she might have listened to one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like everything. Well, the thing is, I haven't actually listened to it, but I'm in the room often when you're recording them.
I see.
So I hear, I mean, I do hear a lot of it.
Fair enough.
Well, we'll start. We're actually going to start. I'm a little bit thrown off because one of the films that we're going to discuss I've never seen or heard of in this case. Actually, so this is going to be interesting.
It's all right.
So your choice for The Other Side, you married up the director and went with a Peter Jackson film called Bad Taste.
Bad Taste. Which
do you remember roughly when it was from?
I think it's either 85 or 87.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. What's it about?
It is about an alien invasion of a small town in New Zealand. By aliens who are using the New Zealanders as meat in their fast food products.
Cool.
Oh my god, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. So it's basically a zombie movie that's actually around aliens, but it's like just an ultimate gross out splatter flick made at extremely low budget, $25,000 over the course of 3 years.
I think I owe more than that.
Yeah. But it's, well, what's weird is you look at it and it is unquestionably rudimentary. The editing could be improved. Everything could be improved. The performances are terrible. Jackson plays two roles. I'll talk about that in a minute.
Was this his first film?
Yeah.
Okay.
His first feature. He made film. He's like Spielberg, right? But his first feature. But what's amazing is the scope of visuals he gets on screen for $25,000 compared to something like, say, Clerks, which was made 5 years later, and for the exact same amount of money, is two guys talking in a convenience store.
In black and white.
Yeah, in black and white. Like, Jackson is... He made most of the visual effects himself, like cooked the rubber masks in his mom's oven, built the third scale model of the house that they had to blow up, and it's just like minute by minute, the visuals he puts on screen, you're just like, how did you do this for budget? Like, it's unbelievable in scale for what it is.
Right.
Which is still pretty stupid and gross.
Does this thing even exist on DVD?
Oh, like yeah, you can get it on DVD.
Jeez. So now, why that one above, like, the rest of his filmography?
Well, I just happened, when you sent out the question of what we should do, I just happened to watch it the day before, and one of the things that really struck me about it, well, and obviously, I mean, I was just in a big Peter Jackson mood, right? That's why I was watching all of his movies. But one of the things that really struck me about it was that even then, he was extraordinarily good at incorporating visual effects into his cut, right? Like, he was frequently cutting between full-size sets, models, prosthetics, gore effects, and they all looked like they were shot in the same place at the same time when they couldn't have been. It had to have taken place over many years. A lot of stuff was just special effects inserts, and often, especially in the low budget, I'm thinking of stuff like the first Evil Dead,
yeah.
stuff that was shot second unit or later, sticks out. Like, you notice that it must have not been shot at that time.
Even Terminator.
Terminator.
You know, like, well, I think about the scene where he's, like, he's basically doing the first aid on himself. Like, he's cutting away. And that's obviously, like, a really hard cut away from Arnold to, I don't know if that was ILM, but to the Stan Winston shot. Winston.
Yeah.
And then it comes back when he's all done.
And that's a great example. Terminator cost $7 million, right? In 1984. At the same time. Yeah. And Jackson, I would argue, with one notable exception, which is that there is a life mask of Jackson himself, which is not very well made up, so it looks fake. But for the most part, he's getting effects that are about as good as Stan Winston Studios circa 1985, and it's like, that ain't right. I mean, God, I love you, Stan, and I sincerely hope you were smiling down on us at this conversation, because I'm sure you were impressed too, but yeah, it was great. Great stuff.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that Peter Jackson plays, like, various roles within it.
He plays two roles. So he plays one of the alien hunters, and then he also plays one of the townsfolk who has been sort of zombieized by the aliens. And he actually has a fight with himself on a cliff that results in one of the goriest deaths ever put on film.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I think we need to see this.
Yeah,
we'll definitely see that.
This is part of why I ask people to like to bring in a second film, because if it's something that I've never seen before, I make the effort and watch it. And that's the thing. Like, now I'm regretting that I didn't watch it ahead of time.
Oh yeah,
this sounds like it's totally up your alley.
Yeah, it does.
As if it's not, like, it's from the '80s, so like, let's start there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of low budge.
Yeah.
And I guess like that is kind of, I usually end with the takeaway, but that's the takeaway within itself is like kind of look at the beginnings that it was. As far as this creative mind was concerned, and Peter Jackson, it was all there at the start. All he really needed was a bigger budget and better tools.
Yeah. And also, one of the things that I consistently remind people when they watch stuff like Lord of the Rings with Lovely Bones or Heavenly Creatures, the dude is a gross-out fanatic.
Yeah.
Like, he likes gross stuff. Like, that's why in Two Towers, when they're eviscerating one of the orcs, you can see intestines being thrown up in the air. It's like, he's that guy. Right? He can do all this sort of high class, highbrow stuff, but at the end of the day, Peter Jackson just enjoys a good fart joke.
Don't we all?
Yeah, I was going to say, who doesn't really?
Yeah.
Well, Lindsay, your other side comes from 2005. We rewatched it yesterday. You are talking about the Garth Jennings film, A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I guess you chose because of the Martin Freeman connection.
Martin Freeman connection, but also, I think, tonally. With The Hobbit, because The Hobbit is a little lighter than the other Lord of the Rings films, and a little, there's some silliness to it, like some silly fun in parts of it. I mean, there's still peril and stuff, but I just felt like Hitchhiker's Guide kind of tonally would be a nice film to butt up with.
Now, you rewatched that for the first time in like 8 years yesterday.
Yeah, I actually didn't remember most of the movie.
I tried to watch it, and I got 15 minutes in, and I was just like, bugger this, I can't.
You don't like it?
I don't.
Really?
Now, I haven't read the book, so
do you like
maybe
the,
that is...
I don't like the book either. Okay. I saw the film in theaters in 2005 and didn't really enjoy it, and Serafina for some reason has it on DVD, so I popped it in. 15 minutes in, I was like, no, not worth my time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is a little slow on the upstart, and by the end, you're just so in love with Alan Rickman's character that he's so great in it.
I also hate Zooey Deschanel. So
that's
sort
a problem.
Well,
that's a problem. If you don't like her, then
it's
a problem. But I do love her.
This is before she was really doing the.
She wasn't really Zooey Deschanel at this point.
No,
was
she was that girl from Almost Famous.
Exactly. I've always had this instinctive dislike of her. Almost like
Almost Famous.
Same thing with Dakota Fanning. I just see them and I go.
Okay, but see that's kind of different because there you're kind of picking out a kid.
I know,
but
it's true. One time I flipped open a magazine, there was a picture of Dakota Fanning's face, and I actually screamed. Not in. Not as comedy, not to entertain the people around me. Instinctually,
really?
I just went,
So I'm trying to understand. So you've got, like, beautiful, sweet, charming Zooey Deschanel, and you can't stand her.
That's right.
And then you've got, like, this weird-looking, anorexic, flat-faced, bad-acting Keira Knightley, and you love her?
She's the Pirate King of Singapore. Do you understand that? Do you understand what I'm saying right now?
I was going to say. So clearly,
like, just in terms of, like, I think there's two human beings. One of them is probably a super nice person, and one of them I'm gonna use a C word that Ryan doesn't like. I love Zooey Deschanel. I just don't get it.
I love Keira Knightley.
I don't get it.
You know what? When we rewatched that yesterday, I was not as crazy about it the second time around.
I didn't love it as much as the first time, but it does. I thought it got more charming towards the end. I think as you get to the end, because Alan Rickman's character, I guess we should say Alan Rickman, Warwick Davis, because
yes,
because
Rickman character. Is the voice and Warwick is the dude
is
in
the body.
Suit.
Yeah,
yeah. Which is
he gets really high billing too. Interesting because he doesn't talk, but mm-hmm. in The Friend he got really high billing.
I think he's billed above Rickman.
Yeah, and so when I kept waiting for him to show up, then I was like, wait a minute, is he just the dude playing the robot? Does he not talk in this?
Yeah,
that's
so,
what it
yeah,
is.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
No, and it's kind of fitting that way that, like The Hobbit, the first half, for me, was a harder slog. I like the beginning. Like, I like when Mos Def shows up and pulls Martin Freeman out, and, you know, we get basically dropped into what's happening within about 5 minutes. But after that, that whole opening bit with meeting Sam Rockwell and his whole thing. I like Rockwell a lot. Did you see Seven Psychopaths?
I still haven't.
Okay. He goes full Rockwell in that movie and it's wonderful. In this movie, it sort of seemed like he was doing somebody's version of full Rockwell and
mm-hmm.
it didn't do as much for me. So mm-hmm. now by the second half, like The Hobbit, by the second half, I was on board.
Same with me. Like when Rockwell first shows up in this, I found him a little...
Much?
A little too much. It didn't seem to fit. But by the end... But again, I think this was a slow build movie. I think you need to watch the whole thing to like it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't... I like The Hobbit more than I like this movie. I'm not saying this is one of my favorite movies or anything. I just think it's a nice little double feature.
Yeah, and like you said, like we get a lot of Martin Freeman. It's like as far as his films go, that's a really, really good one to choose because it's one that really puts him on display. It feels like he hasn't really, like, this is hopefully going to be like his breakout.
Mm-hmm.
He always seems to have been like the number two guy.
But
don't get me wrong, he's been front and center in a lot of British films.
Yeah.
But it feels like...
I've always been a big fan of his. I've never thought he was anything less than...
Yeah, he never really broke out. In the world stage. Until
he was the guy, you knew his face, but you might not have known his name.
Yeah. Well, like, I'm hoping that between this and Sherlock, which I was going to cheat and make that my choice.
Oh, I guess I should have watched Nativity, which I...
Oh, jeez, that's right.
I should switch it up. No, Nativity, apostrophe. Yeah, he's like the main
exclamation
character. Exclamation,
wow.
I'm sorry.
Have you seen this movie?
No.
I had never seen it. Our friend, Miss James, had last Christmas had gone on and on about it. So Christmas went by, I hadn't seen it. So I got the DVD. It was like 2 months after Christmas
that
I finally
watched it. We
watched that
in April.
Yeah, it was a little late. And
Easter.
Yeah.
And I loved it so much. It's basically, there's no script. It's just him improvising with a bunch of children. And the children put on a nativity play. And it's a musical. And most of it's improvised. I don't know where they found these kids. Amazing kids in this movie. Like, there's one kid that looks like Gollum, and he keeps calling him Gollum.
Yeah.
So this actually would have been a great double feature.
Yeah.
I should switch this up. It is so charming and so funny. And the play, it's kind of like in Hamlet 2, where you got kind of an okay movie, but the play that, have you seen Hamlet 2?
I have seen Hamlet 2.
The
I
play
would
they
call
do
it an okay movie.
Yeah.
Oh,
but the show within the show.
The show within the show is so fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Where this is another situation where you've got this like cute comedy, but then they do the show, and you're like, my God, that's a great show.
Right.
Like, that's better than the entire movie should have been. Like, the show in Hamlet 2, I'm like, man, I would have paid good money for tickets to that show.
Yeah.
I think in the special features for that film, they did actually say it wasn't until they finished filming they looked at it and they went, oh, we didn't actually intend to make that show good. We really... it was kind of like a Springtime for Hitler situation where they were trying to make the worst thing they could.
Right.
And then they sat back and watched it and they were like, oh, that was really damn good.
That's fantastic.
Did Hitchhikers leave you wanting for more of the books to get made? Because there's four more.
No, I mean, I've never read any of the books, so it, for me, it's...
You know it's on the shelf, right?
Is it?
Yeah.
I did think I would read it. Maybe I will read it.
I read them when I was 12, and I didn't really get it.
But I mean, I've never read...
That's straight...
I know, it doesn't make sense with who I am.
Yes, I was
going to
say, given
and
how well
at
I
the
know
time,
you.
Like,
yeah.
My friends were like, how are you not insane about this?
Really?
But I just... It never connected.
The Lord of the Rings book and The Hobbit, not only did I not read them until the movies came out... Until the first Lord of the Rings movie was released, I didn't even hear about it when they were making it. I had never heard of the Lord of the Rings books. Never crossed my radar. It wasn't something we read in school. I wasn't into fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
So
and then you and I got together, and that was the end
God,
of that.
You nerded me up.
No,
I don't know what happened.
No kidding.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, for my other side, I also went with a Peter Jackson film. I went with King Kong.
Which is one of my favorites.
Which I rewatched yesterday. You ran for cover.
I have to leave the room when that comes on. Not because it's a bad movie. I enjoyed it when I saw it. But that scene of King Kong playing on the ice, I want to erase from my memory because I've never had my heart broken so much in my life. You know at the end when he's
yeah,
like...
Yeah, I know. You mean you don't like the scene or it's just too good?
It's too...
Okay.
It's, no, it's. I think it's a great scene. But my heart can't take that
mm-hmm.
scene.
My heart can't take half of that movie.
No, I can't watch that movie. I think that movie broke my heart so much that I never want to revisit it.
Yeah.
It's a strange movie for me because I think part of me thinks that the general collective has kind of just shrugged it off and said, oh, you know, that was kind of crap.
But no, meanwhile,
at the time, it it was commercially and critically well received, mm-hmm. along with audiences. Like, it wasn't one of these one, you know.
Yep.
It was just across the board loved. Got like 3 Oscars out of it for effects and mm-hmm. whatnot, and then just got like, forgotten.
Yeah.
And I rewatched it yesterday, reminding myself that this thing is amazing. It is long as hell. It is 3 hours and 5 minutes, and I actually like that. I like that we get an hour on the boat, an hour on the island, and an hour in New York, where we just get, along with the action,
mm-hmm.
we get all these great character moments. Like, it's the kind of film where I feel like in lesser hands, the Jamie Bell character would be a complete afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, he's given all kinds of things to do and things to say, and we learn about him in his fascination. Like, mm-hmm. he's reading Heart of Darkness. So, yeah, so I like that we get that. It's also, like, I love the visual look of it. Like, I can tell a lot of the time where practical is meeting digital,
mm-hmm.
certainly in the backdrop of every scene, because skies are just too perfect and lighting is just too perfect. But I kind of like that for this movie, if that makes any sense, because
it works better there.
Well, because we're remaking a capital C classic Hollywood movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it does not get much more yesteryear than King Kong,
mm-hmm.
And I like that take on it.
Yeah.
So you didn't watch it with me yesterday, but
I always liked the movie, and I thought they did an amazing job of creating a relationship between the girl and the creature.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I mean, a great job. That movie just breaks my heart. So, it made me care too much about him, so that know where it's going. I can't watch it. It's too sad for me.
Yeah. The other thing I did, I didn't realize you had left the room, but I actually had to mute it. When we get to the scene in the spider pit,
yeah,
because that is a scene of sound design run amok.
Indeed,
yeah. Because do you remember that scene where the bugs are all over them?
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, and the holy terror of uncircumcised penises. Like, wow.
Yeah,
that movie's was really interesting for me because for the first 50 minutes I was convinced he just had blown it. Like, I don't really like
really?
The first. I didn't like the first act.
You didn't like you didn't like the first hour.
No. And then there's this, this is how fast it happened. The shot of the freaky girl, as soon as the freaky girl is standing there, the whole movie just completely changed. And mm-hmm. I was like, this is one of the best movies I've ever seen.
Really?
And it totally buys back the first hour. And the next, whatever it is, 2 hours and 10 minutes, I was like, I've rarely had more fun watching a film.
Very cool. Yeah. No, and as I say, I think it's one that a lot of people forgot about. They thought, shit, that's too long.
It's weird. It's been sort of down, like you said, it's been downgraded in people's critical opinions since then, which I don't think is fair.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because part of me thinks it's kind of my little takeaway from it is I actually want Peter Jackson to get away from Middle Earth. That was actually one of the things I was really looking forward to when he announced that he was just going to produce them and Del Toro was going to direct the Hobbit films. Something I was also looking forward to when he teamed up with Spielberg for Tintin. Like, I really want his Tintin film because the idea is one was going to produce, one was going to direct.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the next film, and there will be one because it was worldwide.
Oh, I hated Tintin.
I know you did. But
again, I haven't seen it in 2D. I think 3D ruined it.
You know what? That was one. That was the first Blu-ray I watched that really gave our sound system a workout.
Mm-hmm.
That was one. That's one where things are going like crazy. And the idea was that the second Tintin film, Jackson is supposed to direct and Spielberg is supposed to produce,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the
That'll
other
be
way
interesting.
Around. So that's the thing I want. Like, King Kong reminded me, you know, when you get this guy away from Middle Earth, he's got so many more things to say.
Yeah.
I don't want. The better
I want
part.
Him to stay in Middle Earth forever.
No, I don't want that. I don't want 15 or 20 years of him just doing the one thing with the interruption of The Lovely Bones and King Kong.
Mm-hmm.
I want more stuff like that.
I never actually saw The Lovely Bones.
You saw it, didn't you?
Yeah, I've seen it. I like the movie more than most people.
Okay.
I kind of felt the same way about it as I felt about Life of Pi, obviously with different spiritual connotations, which is that it's exactly what you get when you send a really good director to make a really popular Oprah Club book, which
mm-hmm.
is it's not the most amazing movie ever made. It's competent, it looks terrific, and it hits the beats of the book. You know, like it is.
I haven't
what it
hit
is.
Life of Pi yet because it's playing only in 3D in most places, and I'm not willing to.
The 3D on that is amazing.
But you know what? Okay, because you know I hate 3D. There's so many movies like Tintin you have to see in 3D. It makes all these, like, there's so many movies that I saw and I hated Hugo. And then we got it on DVD and I sat and watched it in regular 2D and I was like, oh my God, this movie's brilliant. So I'm not willing to sit through another movie. I did it for The Hobbit because it was a new thing and I was experimenting. I am officially seen enough movies that people have said, oh no, but this movie, it was shot in 3D and it's brilliant. It's
not working for me. I don't actually think 3D is that important.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to need it.
But yeah, like if you want to see it in 2D,
I already know going in, if I see it in 3D, I'm not going to like the film. Yeah. So why would I put myself through that and kind of taint the film? So it's not playing in a lot of places in 2D, so I might have to wait for
DVDs. But that was my big takeaway from King Kong was I want more of this. Like at this point, we'll have to wait at least another 3 years, I think, to get...
Well, he's saying he's going to try to shoot the new Tintin next year. Before the end of 2013.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but The Hobbit is now shot.
Well, they haven't shot the end. So they have 2 months of continued photography in 2013 to do.
Okay.
And if it's anything like the other movies, I'm sure there'll be even more reshoots after that. But they have a pretty substantial chunk of further shooting.
And there's not going to be... They're not coming a year apart. I think between 2 and 3, between Smog and There and Back Again, we're only going about 6 months. Like, one's a winter and one's the next summer.
That. I'm like, just put it in the winter. It's when it's what we're used to. And we
don't. Is anyone else worried about what it's going to sound like, the talking dragon?
Sure.
I'm looking forward to the dragon. That was actually one of the things I thought that Hobbit did really, really well. Mm-hmm. And certainly watching the creature design on King Kong got me thinking, yeah, this guy's going to be able to do a dragon.
King Kong didn't speak.
No problem. Yeah, but he could.
No, I'm sure it'll look great. I'm just worried about, I don't want it to.
He'll find a way. And remind yourself, the dragon will sound like Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah,
I will keep telling myself that.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Well, that is about it for episode 74 of the Matinee Cast. Come on back on December 31st, New Year's Eve, for episode 75. We'll be talking about our top 5 films of 2012. And if you've enjoyed Lindsay's input on this episode, hey, I've got good news for you. She's back on that episode as well.
Fantastic.
Isn't it? Matt's work can be found all over the friggin' internet. Mamo.ca, row3.com, thesubstream.com, and Tedrick.com. Do you have anything coming up this week that people can look forward to?
We are recording the next episode of a very important podcast this week. I think that means it probably won't get posted until the week of Christmas, but that's going to be on Steven Spielberg.
Oh, really?
The very important is supposed to be once a month, so that we're basically on schedule.
Cool.
And I would recommend go listen to our podcast on high frame rate because Price had some very interesting ideas about how we may get used to that technology.
I'll be listening to it on the drive to Sunday dinner tonight.
So nice. Great.
Very good. And people want to find you on Twitter?
Tedrick, TEDERICK.
People want to find you on Twitter?
Are
you even on Twitter these days?
I'm around.
Okay.
At Lindsay Ragone, LANDSAYRAGONE. I should really simplify that.
You could, but I don't want.
You could.
Sure. Not necessary. Sure. My site is thematinee.ca. For more podcasting content, you can find episodes at thematinee.ca/podcasting. You can also find them on Blueberry, iTunes, the iTunes Music Store. They all give you handy ways to subscribe and get alerts when new episodes drop. Feedback on The Hobbit, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, King Kong, or Bad Taste, which I'm going to watch for sure, can be sent to ryan@thematinee.ca. You can also find me on Facebook, where it's facebook.com/darkmatinee, or Twitter, where I'm matinee_CA. Any final thoughts, folks?
I just would recommend that people get past the HFR debate, and if they're into the Lord of the Rings movies, go give The Hobbit a chance.
Yeah.
Because there's been way more negativity in the media than I think the film actually deserves.
What I like is the option is there.
Sure.
If it was, you have no choice but to watch it this way, I might be digging in more, but I like that it's like, if you want to go see it this way, you can go see it this way. If you want to go see it that way, you can go see it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there we go. For Matt and for Lindsay, I'm Ryan, and we'll see you at the matinee.
Have a holly, jolly Christmas, and in case you